initiatives. This is NPR.
From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio.
This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on Manhattan Free Clinic, providing health care to uninsured neighbors since 2005. With the help of volunteers, patients can access care by appointment at locations across Manhattan. Details at mhkfreeclinic.com.
83 degrees in Lawrence, 79 in Manhattan. The time is 6:06. This is KPR.
From NPR News.
From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 in Lawrence. Also at 91.3 in Junction City. Always online at kansaspublicradio.org. A full listing of all of our frequencies is there, along with a streaming opportunity for you. We stream KPR 1 and KPR 2 there. Again, the web address, kansaspublicradio.org, where you can also become a member when you click on the word support.
Support for KPR comes from the LMH Health Heart Center, providing cardiovascular testing, procedures, and preventative care. More information is available at lmh.org/heart.
Thanks for spending part of your day with us here at KPR. We have news headlines coming up in just about 11 minutes. At 6:36, there was a U.S. Supreme Court ruling handed down last night regarding the gerrymander redistricting in Alabama. And Alabama has a very Republican-leaning congressional district map. Supreme Court said, yep, you can use it, no problem. We will find out what that tells us about the future of other Supreme Court rulings on this issue. Nina Totenberg is the analyst. She'll be along shortly here on KPR.
Support for KPR comes from Heartland Community Health Center, where doctors, dentists, therapists, and more work together to provide health care for the whole person, welcoming all who need care. More information at heartlandhealth.org.
Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low in the lower 60s. Tomorrow we have a slight chance of rain in the morning, a 50% chance of showers and storms tomorrow afternoon, and it will be humid with highs in the mid-80s. It's 83 degrees in Lawrence, 79 in Manhattan. We do have a flood advisory in effect until 8 o'clock tonight for southern Dickinson County. The time is 6:20.
Hear more tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us tomorrow, 5 to 9 a.m. on your KPR stations. Morning Edition is the show. Layla Fadel, Steve Inskeep, and Matthew Algio will get you caught up on the news first thing in the morning.
Support for KPR comes from Meadowlark Wine Bar and Kitchen, located at 1011 Massachusetts Street, offering a curated selection of traditional and natural wines, handcrafted cocktails, and a variety of shareable plates and entrees. More at meadowlarkwinebar.com.
News headlines coming up next. The time is 6:30.
Questions about potential conflicts of interest. In a statement, the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees ICE, told NPR that David Venturella is a veteran government official who abides by all ethics requirements. Meg Anderson, NPR News.
This is NPR.
For Kansas Public Radio News, I'm Laura Lorson with your regional headlines. The campaign manager for a Democratic candidate for Kansas governor uploaded documents to a website that were used in a recent attack on a political rival. Rachel Schnelli has the story.
The name of Senator Patrick Schmidt's campaign manager, Ryan Carey, was found on documents uploaded to a website about Schmidt's political rival, Adam Hamilton, senior pastor at Resurrection Church. The documents detailed complaints about how Hamilton's church handled abuse allegations at a church camp 2 decades ago. The Kansas Reflector reports the site did not disclose if it was paid for by the Schmidt campaign, which would violate federal election law. The site was later taken offline. Hamilton is believed to be the frontrunner for the Democratic ticket, and Schmidt has called publicly for him to drop out. For the Kansas News Service, I'm Rachel Schnelli.
The Kansas Republican Party will be holding a televised gubernatorial debate on Friday night, and that debate will feature 4 candidates for governor, including State Senate President Ty Masterson, Secretary of State Scott Schwab, businessman Philip Sarnecki, and former State Representative Charlotte O'Hara. Two candidates are not participating in the debate, Kansas Insurance Commissioner Vicki Schmidt and Wichita businesswoman Stacey Rogers. Rogers and Schmidt both object to the party's requirements for participation in the debate. Rogers says she disagrees with a mandatory $10,000 fee.
And it was called a required donation. Donations are not required.
The state's Republican Party says the fee is not, quote, out of the norm, and says the agreement mirrors the process for Republican presidential debates. A Kansas Democratic Party official says there is no fee to participate in their debates or in their forums. Pharmacy technicians at the University of Kansas Health System who were seeking union representation are demanding a recount after 40% of the ballots arrived in the mail late. The union lost their May 14th election by just 2 votes before 37 ballots arrived that were postmarked before the deadline. Megan Bacon is one of the technicians whose vote was not yet counted and says workers deserve to have their voices heard.
We only lost the union by 1 vote at each site. And with these 37, that could have been a whole different game changer.
The technicians are contesting the election results and demanding that the Kansas Public Employee Relations Board count the delayed ballots.
Support for NPR comes from this.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR News. Morning Edition keeps you in touch with your fellow human beings and with people seeking human contact, like those at speed friending events.
It was very good for my soul.
And at no phone bars.
I wanted to create a space where people could come, interact, be vulnerable, be nervous, but be human, you know what I mean?
I do. Listen for Life across the country, weekdays on Morning Edition from NPR News.
You can hear Morning Edition tomorrow, 5 to 9 a.m. on your KPR 1 and KPR 2 stations. From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 FM in Lawrence, 96.1 FM in Lawrence. Lots of other frequencies, too, all listed for you online at kansaspublicradio.org, where we are also streaming 24 hours a day.
Support for KPR comes from the University of Kansas, serving Kansas and the world through research, economic development, and education. Information about KU programs and initiatives is at ku.edu.
Stay with us. Coming up, about another 11 minutes of All Things Considered. If you're joining us on KPR One stations at 7:01, we will have news headlines, followed by Stardate, then 2 hours of classical music. At 9 o'clock, it's Jazz in the Night. If you're joining us on KPR 2, up next is the Moth Radio Hour.
Support for KPR comes from Security Benefit, providing Kansas teachers and educators nationwide with retirement plans and investment options, and funding the Kansas Teacher of the Year program. More information at securitybenefit.com.
There's a flood advisory in effect until 8 o'clock tonight for South Central Dickinson County. It is 10 minutes before 7.
/Ground Advantage. From the Lemelson Foundation, working to harness the power of invention and innovation to accelerate climate action and improve lives around the world. Learn more at lemelson.org. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Rolaids, containing a dual active formula with the goal of neutralizing acid in seconds for heartburn relief. Rolaids spells relief. Learn more at Rolaids.com. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
We keep our questions on Morning Edition civil but direct.
But let's be real. How could your party still screw this up?
Cut to the chase with us every weekday from NPR News.
Join us tomorrow morning, 5 to 9 a.m., right here on KPR. Morning Edition is the show. Matthew Algio will have your local news.
Support for KPR comes from LMH Health Ortho Kansas, providing advanced orthopedic care to help patients stay healthy and active. More information is available at lmh.org/orthokansas.
We're live, we're local, we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City 91.3, KANQ Chanute 90.3. Listen on the web at kansaspublicradio.org or tell your smart speaker to play Kansas Public Radio. Up next, we have news headlines, then start 8, then 2 hours of classical music. At 9 o'clock, you'll hear Jazz in the Night.
Support for KPR comes from KTWU, Channel 11, local public television, where arts, entertainment, educational, and informational programming is offered daily. Details on the web at ktwu.org. KTWU, Channel 11, local public television.
We do have a flood advisory in effect until 8 o'clock this evening for south central Dickinson County. Picked up between 1 and 3 inches of rain in a very short time today. So again, a flood advisory until 8 p.m. for portions of Dickinson County. Otherwise, tonight partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s, 50% chance of showers and storms tomorrow afternoon. It will be humid tomorrow with highs in the mid-80s. It's 7:01.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. Israel and Lebanon have agreed to renew a ceasefire. The plan creates a number of what a joint statement calls pilot security zones inside Lebanon, where Hezbollah militants would be banned. It's not clear how the zones would be created, but the agreement calls for the Lebanese army to take full control of those areas. This week, Iranian state news agencies said Iran had stopped communicating with mediators brokering a ceasefire with the U.S. because of Israel's incursion into Lebanon. A bipartisan majority in the Republican-led House has voted to end the war with Iran. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports this was the clearest rebuke yet of President Trump's handling of the conflict and the subsequent fallout.
New York Democrat Gregory Meeks helped force the vote to end the Iran war that's now 90 days in. He thanked the 5 Republicans who joined Democrats to get the War Powers Resolution over the finish line.
We're at the point where you have to put people, the American people, over politics.
One of those Republicans, Pennsylvania's Brian Fitzpatrick, argued once the conflict passed the 60-day mark, it violated the War Powers Act.
I follow the law. People have a hard time being consistent around here. They apply different rules to different presidents, different wars, different eras. The law is the law.
For now, the vote remains symbolic. Even if it were to pass in the Senate, too, Trump would be able to veto it. Claudia DeSalis, NPR News, the Capitol.
The Senate is debating legislation to fund immigration enforcement agencies after weeks of delay. It comes after Republican leaders stripped $1 billion in funding for White House security and President Trump's ballroom that had been included in an earlier draft. But there are still concerns over a proposed anti-weaponization fund for Trump's allies, which Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche said yesterday was not moving forward, but Trump suggested today could be resurrected. Democrats and some Republicans have said they won't support the measures. Copper prices are near an all-time high, in part because of the AI data center boom. That means copper wire theft has been on the rise, too, as NPR's John Ruich reports.
The phone company AT&T says it counted more than 10,400 incidents of copper wire theft last year, some 4,000 of which were in California. In Northern California this year, the company says the numbers are up sharply. AT&T West President Susan Santana says the company has been bolting down manholes, putting alarms in spans of wire, hiring security guards, and is even offering money for information that leads to arrests. The company runs a legacy copper wire network that she says serves only about 3% of its customers. AT&T is hoping to shift customers to other options, although it says state law is holding it back. AT&T recently filed suit against California to be able to wind down its century-old copper wire network and take away a big target of would-be copper thieves. John Ruich, NPR News.
Oil prices rose following the latest threats to the U.S.-Iran ceasefire. This is NPR News from Washington.
Stardate June 3rd. The goddess of the dawn has given millions of Americans a rare treat the past couple of years. Brilliant displays of the northern lights in regions where they're seldom seen. Today, we know that these colorful curtains of light are powered by storms on the sun. Bigger storms expand the viewing area. But in centuries past, cultures around the globe created their own explanations. In Scandinavia, for example, the northern lights might have represented Bifrost, the rainbow bridge that connected Earth to Asgard, the home of the gods. In some of the islands of Scotland, the lights represented a pair of chieftains fighting for the hand of the merry dancer. In southern England, they were considered omens of misfortune. Some saw the lights as clashing swords. Red lights were streamers of blood. During an intense outburst in March 1716, at the end of a civil war, people ran into the streets in their nightclothes, and some thought it was Judgment Day. One writer said that some read in its glaring visage the fate of nations and the fall of kingdoms. The name for the northern lights, the Aurora Borealis, was bestowed in 1619 by Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei. Aurora was the Roman goddess of the dawn. Boreas was the Greek god of storms and the north wind, one of the namesakes of the always beautiful, sometimes frightening, northern lights. More about the aurora tomorrow. Today's program was made possible by Mercer Caverns in Calaveras County in California's historic gold country. More information at mercercaverns.net. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
Hi, I'm Jake Armerding. So glad to be listening to music with you. Welcome. Ludwig von Beethoven was no fan of opera. That kind of frivolous nonsense that was Mozart's bread and butter, it just grated on him. He was a serious composer. Not a party animal, that Beethoven. However, Vienna was crazy for opera, so he had to basically roll his eyes and get to work. This is what came out. It was a huge struggle for him. He had to revise it three times. Hated the process so much, he swore off opera forever. And it tells you something about how good he was that his one single opera is the only one from that period of time that's still being played. Here's the overture from Fidelio. Yeah. Kurt Mazur, leading the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, performing the Fidelio Overture by Beethoven, his one and only opera. Never again, he said, after struggling through it. 50 years later, 1841, Robert Schumann, very happily married to his wife Clara, all the more so because there'd been this protracted fight with her dad about them getting hitched. They eventually took him to court over it. It was a whole deal. In the end, the lovers triumphed, and it was in this afterglow that Schumann composed this music. So it has this very joyful spring-like quality to it, although that doesn't really show up until quite a ways into the work. He starts off in E minor, kind of slow and ominous, almost like he's remembering the courtroom battle. Then he modulates to E major, the happiest of all keys, and it's just pure, unadulterated joy after that. Like one of those morning people.
Thank you.
Robert Schumann originally considered that his second symphony. Then he went and made it sound much more complicated. The overture, scherzo, and finale, performed by the Irish Chamber Orchestra. Angela Hewitt conquers J.S. Bach, coming up. It's rumored that J.S. Bach's keyboard sonatas were performed not only at church, which is to say at work, but also at home. He wrote them at a time when he had many talented keyboardists in the house, many of them his own children. Here's the keyboard sonata number 3. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Tognetti, conducting the Australian Chamber Orchestra featuring pianist Angela Hewitt, the Keyboard Concerto No. 3 by Bach. We're off to Saskatchewan in 60 seconds.
Support for classical music on KPR comes from KU's School of Professional Studies, an economic engine for the region, providing career-specific degrees, professional development programs, and leadership workshops that strengthen communities. More at sps.ku.edu. And the LMH Health Cancer Center, offering full-service cancer care from diagnostics to treatment to recovery, all in one place. More information available at lmh.org/cancercare.
Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 80 and clear. Wind is from the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Wind will be from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the mid-80s. Wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms with a low in the upper 60s. It's 80 and clear. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
The songwriter, activist, and seamstress Pura Faye Crescioni is descended from the Tuscarora clan. That's an indigenous people group from the northeastern woodlands of the U.S. and Canada, and a branch of the Iroquois, as of course you know. She now makes her home in Saskatchewan in the Cree Territory. Here's the Dover Quartet performing Women's Shuffle. Come on, that was way too short. The Dover Quartet doing justice to Women's Shuffle from the Rattle Songs by Pura Faye Crescioni. Here's French romantic composer and organist Charles-Marie Vidor with the introduction and rondo.
From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. And online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 80 and clear. Wind is from the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the mid-80s. Wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms with a low in the upper 60s. It's 80 and clear. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
How much of this concerto could you remember if you had to? Well, it might be a little more memorable if you've composed it, but still, 30 minutes of orchestrated music? Impossible.
If I remember correctly, it was a piece written to be premiered in Norfolk, Connecticut, and he had sent it over, and the ship didn't make the crossing. And Coleridge Taylor had to rewrite all the parts from memory, which is, I think, kind of amazing to think about. But he did.
I'll have the whole story coming up this hour.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. President Trump says the ceasefire with Iran is still holding. This, as NPR's Franco Ordonez reports, follows another set of airstrikes by American forces and retaliatory strikes by Iran.
The latest set of deadly strikes between the two countries threatened to upend peace talks and the already fragile ceasefire between the two nations. Trump said there was a reason behind the U.S. strikes, echoing a U.S. military assessment that they were defensive moves.
And I'd say in that part of the world, ceasefires when you're shooting in a more moderate manner.
Mr. President, yesterday you signed.
A ceasefire there is much different than a ceasefire in other parts of the world.
But he insisted talks continue to go, quote, very well, and that it's possible they could reach an agreement in a matter of days. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, the White House.
Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen doubled down on his threat to remove Customs and Border Protection officers from airports in cities that don't typically cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. Mullen criticized what the administration calls sanctuary cities for letting local police refuse to cooperate with immigration agents.
If that means I got to pull them out of Customs and Border Protection from processing international flights, I will. If they're cooperating with us, then I don't have to do that.
Mullen's threat has sparked criticism from the travel industry, for its potential to cause chaos just ahead of the World Cup. The chief executive of OpenAI, Sam Altman, was in Washington today meeting with White House officials and members of Congress. The trip comes a day after President Trump signed an executive order creating a voluntary government review process for some of the most powerful AI models, NPR's Windsor Johnston reports.
Altman is meeting with White House officials to discuss AI policy as well as bipartisan congressional lawmakers who oversee the technology sector. The visit comes as AI companies increasingly find themselves at the center of policy debates in Washington. While the industry has invested heavily in lobbying and public outreach, some Democrats are pushing for tougher oversight of artificial intelligence, citing concerns about jobs, energy demand, and the growing influence of the nation's largest tech companies. Republicans have pushed for a lighter regulatory approach. President Trump's executive order includes a provision that would allow some advanced AI models to undergo a 30-day government review before the release to the public. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Polymarket is ending its paid relationship with former Republican Congressman George Santos as federal regulators investigate him for possible insider trading. Santos bet against his attendance at President Trump's State of the Union this past February. He later blamed a delayed flight for missing the event. Santos made the trades on Kalshi, another prediction marketplace, which referred them to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. This is NPR News.
better vascular health essentially equals a lower risk for another stroke or experiencing another heart event like a heart attack, for example.
That KU graduate researcher is studying which type of exercise is best for vascular health for those who have suffered a stroke.
My name is Bria Barch. I am an occupational therapist and an exercise physiologist, and I am in my fourth year of the PhD program in rehabilitation science at KU Medical Center.
You're studying types of exercise. What are some examples?
We are looking at moderate intensity continuous training and high intensity interval training performed on a seated stepper. You can think of moderate intensity continuous training as continuously exercising at an intensity that is similar to that which you would reach during a brisk walk. And you can think of high intensity interval training as going really hard and then slowing down for a bit and going really hard again and slowing down and repeating that over and over.
This study is ongoing, so you don't have all the data. But what are you seeing?
I am blinded to which group people are in, so I don't know if they're doing the moderate intensity training or the high intensity interval training. What I can say is so far I am seeing improvements in artery health. I just don't know what group people are in.
How will this research make a difference for those who have suffered a stroke?
So our hope is that by finding an exercise intervention that may help improve vascular health to a greater extent than the most commonly prescribed form of exercise, being moderate intensity continuous training, that we may further reduce long-term risk of having another stroke or having a heart attack.
For more information about graduate research, visit graduate.ku.edu or our website at kansaspublicradio.org. For Research Matters, I'm Steve Kincaid.
Maybe you're drawn to the English landscape, or maybe you're like me and you'd take that a whole lot further. Maybe you went to England one summer and that's still the best summer of your life. And now your fantasy is to live in a field in England, close to a pub. Either way, Ralph Vaughan Williams is your man. Here's some music meant to evoke the area of East England called East Anglia. It's a little bleak out there, but that's the beauty of it. This is called In the Fen Country. Barry Wordsworth leading the New Queen's Hall Orchestra in the Fun Country by Ralph Vaughan Williams. Gil Shaham finally conquers Coleridge Taylor's Violin Concerto. Coming up.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 91.3 Junction City, and always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on Manhattan Free Clinic, working with local partners like Via Christi, Pawnee Mental Health, and area health departments to expand care for uninsured patients. More information at mhkfreeclinic.com.
Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 80 and clear. Wind is from the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the mid-80s. Wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms with a low in the upper 60s. It's 80 and clear. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
The violinist Gil Shaham has just released a new project with Eric Jacobson and the Virginia Symphony Orchestra featuring the Violin Concerto by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. Here are his thoughts about getting around to it.
People have been telling me for more than, I think, more than 30 years, oh, you have to learn the Coleridge Taylor. You have to know, you learn the Coleridge Taylor. And I didn't, you know, I didn't get around to it. And I guess it was a COVID project. COVID happened, and I thought, okay, now it's time to learn the Coleridge Taylor. And it's one of the great masterpieces. I really love it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Gil Shaham, backed up by the Virginia Symphony Orchestra, led by Eric Jacobson. The Violin Concerto by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. Some music from Samuel's daughter, Avril, is coming right up. Samuel Coleridge Taylor cast a pretty long shadow, musically speaking. His daughter Avril had a tough time stepping out of it. She absolutely did so, though it took up most of her career to pull it off. She'll finish off this hour of British composers. Here is her Valse Caprice.
Thank you.
All the records show Avril Coleridge-Taylor had the toughest time getting the BBC to pay attention to her music. They're paying attention now. John Andrews conducting the BBC Philharmonic, performing her Valse Caprice.
From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. And online at kansaspublicradio.org.
I'm Maria Lopez. Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 79 and clear. Wind is from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the mid-80s. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms with a low in the upper 60s. It's 79 and clear. Stay tuned for more KPR weather. I'm Maria Lopez.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. Israel and Lebanon have agreed to renew a ceasefire. The agreement is contingent upon cessation of fire by the militant group Hezbollah and the evacuation of Hezbollah from certain areas in southern Lebanon. Hezbollah has not yet said whether it will abide by the agreement. This week, Iran said it stopped communicating with mediators brokering a ceasefire with the U.S. because of Israel's incursion into Lebanon. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has wrapped up 2 days of congressional hearings. Protesters shouted Free Palestine, and one senator pressed Rubio about Israeli violence in the West Bank, as NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Oregon Democrat Jeff Merkley is sounding the alarm about Jewish settlers attacking Palestinians in the West Bank, saying they're trying to separate Palestinian villagers from their farms and sources of water. Secretary Rubio tells the senator that he's raised concerns about this repeatedly with the Israeli government.
And it's already a tinderbox over there. The last thing we need is to throw one more match into that fire. And that's the point we've made to them repeatedly on the West Bank.
I appreciate you making that point, and I encourage us to press that very hard because it's a very unjust situation.
Senator Merkley says the U.S. should also press Israel to allow international journalists into Gaza. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
David Venturella is the new acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. As NPR's Meg Anderson reports, he's a former executive of the private prison company Geo Group.
About a third of immigrant detainees are in a facility run by Geo Group. In 2025, Geo Group's profits soared nearly 700% from the year before. Scott Shuchart was a top official at ICE under President Biden. He says the level of influence Geo Group has in the detention industry is concerning.
They are absolutely hand in glove. When Geo comes in for a meeting, it feels like a fraternity reunion.
He says that raises questions about potential conflicts of interest. In a statement, the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees ICE, told NPR that David Venturella is a veteran government official who abides by all ethics requirements. Meg Anderson, NPR News.
The crowded race to replace Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom is looking like it could come down to Democrat Javier Becerra and Republican Steve Hilton. Laura Fitzgerald from member station Cap Radio in Sacramento has more.
You might not expect a Republican to be in the lead here in California, but here most races are a top two primary, meaning the two candidates who get the most votes in the primary end up advancing to the general election, regardless of what party they're in. And more Democrats were running, meaning they'd each get a smaller percentage of the vote. Javier Becerra is leading the pack of Democrats in the race. He's got a lengthy political career, kind of a fixture of California's Democratic establishment.
Lord Fitzgerald from member station Cap Radio reporting. This is NPR. The U.S. government has granted a visa to Woudensky Pierre, the only member of Haiti's national soccer team living in the Caribbean country. He was awaiting permission to travel for the World Cup. Teammates arrived last week to start preparing. This is only the second time Haiti has qualified for the World Cup. Pierre has been training in Port-au-Prince while awaiting the visa. The U.S. Department of Justice is investigating claims that Arizona State University is discriminating against some students using surreptitious diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. For member station KJZZ, Wayne Shutsky reports.
The department says the investigation was prompted by viral videos that show ASU may be denying equal treatment to students based on race, color, or national origin. The department did not specify which videos it was referring to. But earlier this year, a conservative watchdog published secret recordings of faculty members talking about the ways they promote inclusivity while following new rules designed to block DEI policies. At the time, an ASU spokesperson denied the university engaged in discrimination. The Department of Education previously threatened to strip federal funding from schools and universities that did not end race-based decision-making, but a judge struck down those policies last year. For NPR News, I'm Wayne Shutsky in Phoenix.
A series of bizarre sightings of people popping out of New York's vast sewer system has the city wondering what's going on. Videos show groups of people entering and exiting the sewers at night in the boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens. Police said they don't believe there's any threat to public safety after conducting a thorough sweep. The City Department of Environmental Protection stressed that entering the sewers is illegal and extremely dangerous. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
That's Hendrik Merkens getting us off to a Brazilian start on tonight's Jazz in the Night on Kansas Public Radio. His composition, Herb Samba, his new album, Samba Tanto. On that one, featured on vibes, he plays both harmonica and vibes on the album. Justice Hayer, the trombonist, Laura Dreyer on flute, Misha Siganoff on keyboards, Roberto Belo bass, and Perthino drums. Hendrik Merkens on Jazz in the Night. In just a few minutes, we'll hear from our Jazz Album of the Week, a wonderful new album by pianist Billy Childs in a trio format. And a little bit later as well, we'll dive into the vinyl vault to hear trumpeter Charles Tolliver here on KPR. But right now, it's pianist Anthony Wanzi in an album he did called The Thang back in 2005 with Nat Reeves and Joe Farnsworth bass and drums, and on four tracks, guest tenor saxophonist Eric Alexander. This is one of those, and this is a piece Anthony Wanzi wrote, especially with Eric Alexander's tenor chops in mind. It's called The Paper Chase. Thank you. pianist Anthony Wanzi from his album The Thang. Not The Thang, The Thang on Sharp 9 Records back just over 20 years ago. And a piece he wrote for that tenor saxophonist Eric Alexander to feature.